Hey, what's up, Pelicans fans? You are listening to the Bird Rights here on Nothing But Net Network on Dash Radio. For more breakdowns on the Pelicans, including interviews with coaches, journalists, and opposing experts, go to iTunes right now, search the Bird Rights, and subscribe today. What's up, Pelicans fans, and Merry Christmas! You are listening to the Bird Calls podcast, and I am your host, Preston Ellis. Today, we're recapping our two most recent holiday affairs with our editor-in-chief, Ali Cosell. What's up, Ali?
What's up, Preston? We made it through the Christmas holidays without getting killed or whatever. I don't know. Any bad stories happening?
Bite your tongue, man. It's still early. We still have until at least New Year's Eve at the earliest. And of course, he's joined by his sleepy cohort, fresh off his nap time, soda in hand. He's joined by Kevin Berrios. How you feeling, Kev?
I'm good, man. I've spent the day building Hot Wheels racetracks, and I'm good to go now.
Nice. Glad to have both of you guys with us. It's the first time we've talked in at least a week. Took a short holiday break there, so glad to be back. Of course, you guys can follow me at Preston Ellis, Kevin at Kevin B for Bounce, and Ali at Ali Cosell. Let's dive right in, you guys. We'll start with Ali, as we always do, as he is the editor and does a lot more work than the rest of us. The New Orleans Pelicans got two much-needed victories this past weekend in Orlando and Miami, and the games played out pretty much identically. The Pelicans faced depleted rosters without the likes of Evan Fournier, Aaron Gordon, Terrence Ross, Jonathan Isaac, Deion Waiters, Hassan Whiteside, Justice Winslow, and Rodney Magruder, and I'm sure I probably missed some others. With that being said, they took care of business. In game one against the Magic, I was in attendance. That's probably a large part of why they did so well. And they were led by the three-headed monster. Anthony Davis, Boogie, and Drew combined for 70. Game two, it was more of the bench putting up 44. The team cut down on turnovers 29 through the two games and held both opponents under 100 points. So, Ali, how much of this was smart, energy-driven basketball, doing what the coach tells them, and how much of it was just getting a lucky break against two crippled depth charts?
Crippled. I like that. Come on. We don't take advantage of the sick and the wounded and whatever. No. These were actually, I think, I want to say two good wins because we've played teams in the past, and do I need to point any more than that Sacramento Kings game where we lost to, when was that, December 8th? And you know, that's not a roster that anybody should be competing with. I mean, Zach Randolph scoring over 30 points. No, these two guys, or these two teams, excuse me, they were definitely shorthanded. But, Preston, they still put up a decent fight, especially the Miami Heat squad. But you touched on already the offense, how well they played. I want to talk about the defense. The Pelicans have had a tough time keeping opponents underneath 100 points. And before this past weekend, I think they had only held, what was it, four times in the first 32 games, 31 games, something like that. The opponents under 100 points. And so this was a really big deal. And it was noticeable. For instance, you didn't see those run out fast break points. You didn't see, especially the points off turnovers. Wow. I think that was probably the biggest thing. Because the Pelicans, regardless of who they play, when they play, seems like they give up their usual standard 16 to 20 turnovers. That's accompanied by at least 20 points by the opponent. But if I remember right, when I looked at the stats, the Pelicans held both of the teams to under 10. Same thing with fast break points. They had a little bit of an issue with second chance points because somehow they can't always put everything together. So rebounding was a little bit of an issue. But overall, yeah, the offense was wonderful. The big three did their thing against the Magic. And then everybody else stepped up against the Heat. They shot the hell out of that ball. I think what was impressive, like around 60%, they shot from three-point range. So, yeah, the Pelicans just basically steamrolled through Florida. And it'll be interesting to see where this takes them. Because every time we think they've turned a corner with a defense on, if you guys have noticed, every time they've held opponents to under 100, it's been three times in back-to-back games. So let's see if we can make it three in a row before, I don't know, before the season ends. Let's change it up a little bit. Let's not have to wait another 15 games before the Pelicans can accomplish its feat.
Yeah, and Kevin and I are going to touch upon the need for a winning streak here a little bit later. And you were right on the money, 60% against the Heat, although they only shot 33% from three against the Magic. Kevin, we just talked about that, and Ali also addressed how important it was for the Pelicans to get some confidence defensively, keeping the two squads under 100 at 97 and 94. But what was your biggest takeaway from the two-day trip in Florida?
Well, for me, I think what we saw a lot of, which is what I think a lot of us have wanted for most of the season, was DeMarcus Cousins playing more down low. You know, in the Magic game, he basically lived inside the arc, and same thing in the Heat game, he was pretty much inside the arc in that game too, which puts AD as the high man, and I think that works better for us. You know, you don't have Cousins driving with the high dribble, creating turnovers. You create more mismatches with him down low, because when he's up high, he'll settle for jumpers, which teams can guard with one defender. Whereas if AD's at the top, he won't settle for the shot. He'll make cuts, or he'll drive in or find open spots on the floor. So I think it just creates much more of a mismatch for the defense that way. And I'm very happy to see that. And also, he was getting the calls that we expected him to get every night. And he expects, obviously, to get every night, because that gets in his head sometimes. So it was good to see him rewarded for also playing close to the rim.
Kevin, let me ask you a follow-up question really quickly, because having DeMarcus Cousins down in the post is where he's most valuable, but having him up at the key has given a jolt of electricity to players like Jrue Holiday and Etuan Moore, and even Dante Cunningham to some extent. These guys doing the backdoor cuts, run around screens, and all of a sudden they have all this space for the clever finishes that Etuan Moore and Jrue Holiday have become known for, this glorious floater game that Etuan Moore utilizes. How nice is it having DeMarcus Cousins at the top of the key from time to time to allow the space for these driving guards?
Yeah, I mean, it is nice for him to do that, and there's certainly reasons to do that, because that also does create other problems for defenders. But I think you can get the same kind of thing with him more at the elbow. You don't have to have him all the way in the post, and you can still get that kind of spacing and those kind of cuts, and it also creates all those other things. But of course, I mean, it's nice to see him out there operating a little bit sometimes to just keep the defense honest and throw different looks out there also. I mean, anytime you can throw multiple looks at a defense and cause chaos and confusion, that's what you want.
You might be fresh out of a nap time, but your brain is activated, sir. You guys are listening to the Bird Rights on Nothing But Net Network on Dash Radio. Ali, let's swing it back to you, man. Let's go ahead and preview some upcoming games. The Pelicans head into a very favorable schedule, and man, it's time for a winning streak. Like I said, Kevin and I have an article about this either coming late tonight or tomorrow at some point. The next three contests come against teams with combined records of 39-61, Eastern Conference foes, the Brooklyn Nets and the New York Knicks, as well as the Dallas Mavericks, who are the bottom dwellers of those three. The Nets fight hard, and the Knicks currently sit eighth in the East at 17-16, so these guys are not going to lay down by any means. But yet, three games are all at home, and this stretch is about as easy as it's going to get for the Pelicans until February. These teams have combined to lose 10 of their last 15 games, so it's a good time, schedule-wise, for the Pelicans to face these three. How important is it, Ollie, for the Pelicans to get a five-game winning streak here?
I think it's a really big deal. As we talked about and seen, the Pelicans throughout most of December were winning one, losing one there for a good two, maybe almost three-week stretch. And overall, I think they've had a couple of three-game winning streaks, a couple of two-game winning streaks, but they haven't really sustained anything. And it shows in the effort from almost game to game. So it's not like that they're deserving of, say, a long winning streak. Although the five wins would definitely be nice. I like to see them just sustain that effort on, you know, just like we saw in Florida. I think that's going to be the biggest key with this team. Everybody's talking, writing about the offenses, and I even wrote about them too, but thing is, with this team, points are not ever going to be an issue. I think we're well into where sample sizes aren't an issue anymore. We're 33 games into the season. The offense has had no problems whatsoever. So, and that, you know, that's where the loss come from, is on the other side of the ball. So that's what I want to see. I think regardless of the opponent, although it does help, as you mentioned, we're catching these teams on a good stretch. But, you know, we've seen with this team, the Pelicans, that is, it doesn't matter who we play. We're liable to give up incredible runs to the opponent simply because the defense isn't there. I won't forget the Atlanta Hawks game where they should have won that game inside the Smoothie King Center. I've already talked about the loss to the Kings. So, Preston, the five-game winning streak definitely would be nice. It would probably help their confidence levels more than anything. It'll probably set some kind of, I don't know what you want to call it,
whether it's something that they're working on. This is what I asked Galvin Gentry today, actually, in practice. Was, first of all, I asked him about that defense, what they did to improve or why they looked so improved in Florida. And he basically said that the guard got up into the players more, and then that the bigs were in pretty much in good position to help out and also stay with their own men. And I can kind of see that. You've noticed with the better defensive teams this season, they put really good pressure on the ball all the way out to the three-point line. And that's been a huge issue for our team. We've given up either a lot of easy three-pointers. Thankfully, that has kind of died down. It's where opponents just aren't, you know, raping us for 15 made threes in a game.
Whoa.
Well, you know, that's what it felt like. I mean, the Toronto game, that was back-to-back loss of Toronto. I mean, they got every three-pointer they wanted. It seemed like they made, you know, a gazillion of them. So, yeah, it kind of felt like that.
Sorry, man,
for the poor choice in words, guys. But let's move on, okay? Yeah, five-game winning streak. I think, Preston, they've got to do it. It'll help be a boost to their confidence. They can maybe sustain a defensive effort. Maybe this will be like a turnaround as to where they have found something that works. They can continue on that. And energy won't be such a big problem, because I still feel like that's the number one issue with this team. If they don't have that requisite energy for most of the 48 minutes of the game, they're liable to lose to anybody.
Yeah, and both Alvin Gentry and DeMarcus Cousins addressed defensive intensity and keeping it going for 48 minutes during their open availability media practice today. Ali was in attendance, and you can see some of those interviews at pelicans.com/live, as well as a quick 5 minutes from Rajon Rondo. And you can hear some of Ali's questions that he directed to Alvin Gentry on there. Make sure you check that out. Kevin, let's sling it to you. Each of the Pelicans' next three games are at home. Five of the next eight are at home. They've had a tough stretch as of late, having lost 8 of 12 before heading to Florida, five of which they led by double digits and then lost in the fourth quarter. Do you expect the Pelicans to head into next week 20-16 as a follow-up to Ollie's question? And if they do, what do you expect the national media's reaction to be to it?
I mean, I expect them to win these three games. I think the toughest one, well, I think they're kind of sandwich, because I think the Brooklyn Nets are a better team than people think that they are. They're very well coached, they're very disciplined, and they play with a lot of energy and intensity. And they've lost a lot of close games. So that one's not going to be much of a cakewalk. I do expect us to win. We're definitely the superior team talent-wise. And if we play with the right intensity like we saw us play with in Florida, then we should win this game, and I expect us to. But I think it's not going to be a blowout like we saw in Florida. I don't think we're going to get to rest guys like we would like down the stretch. You know, I think it's going to be nip and tuck, and we'll pull away in the fourth. Dallas is a team that we should beat them pretty handedly. I mean, their big men are they just don't match up well with ours, and if we use our strength the right way, we should take care of business there and hopefully be able to rest our players and then go into what might be the toughest matchup against the Knicks. Because, you know, it's kind of interesting. In the off season, you know, everybody was like, how is this going to work for the Pelicans, these two centers starting for us, and how they're going to coexist? And then now we're seeing, like, you know, the Spurs have been playing Gasol and Aldridge, and then basically a power forward in Kyle Anderson while Kawhi was out in their front line together. And then now we're playing the Knicks team, who basically is also playing two centers at the same time. So it's becoming more of an accepted thing when we thought we were more of the odd man out. So that's an interesting matchup. And those two guys crash the offensive glass. They rebound. They're dynamic on offense. So we need to make sure that we have that defensive intensity. And I think if we start to show that defensive intensity with what Ali said about our offense, and, you know, I think it's definitely going to open some eyes, especially, you know, even though those are the teams that we would have beaten five in a row aren't, you know, people who are like world beaters at the time. It's still five wins in a row. And I think, you know, you're going to start seeing people jumping back on the bandwagon and calling us a league pass darling team and those kind of things. So it'll be exciting for the city. Hopefully local fans will get more engaged as well, you know.
Yeah, it'll definitely be a nice contrast to some of the stuff that came out last week with the Anthony Davis, Adrian Wojnarowski article. Make sure you check that out, where Anthony Davis just pretty much expels his disgust with losing. He mentions winning 22 times. I shouldn't say he downplays losing. He just kind of vents his frustration, talks about how he wants a winner and how he wants to bring one to New Orleans. But just the fact that he took the meeting puts a lot of Pelicans fans on edge. And to continue what Kevin was talking about with the Brooklyn Nets, of course, the Knicks are 17 and 16 playing well. As well as he mentioned the Brooklyn Nets, they beat the Wizards a few days ago by 35. Of course, this was one game back of John Wall and Otto Porter. These guys played limited minutes, and they did not play well. They were both very rusty. With that being said, they beat a professional basketball team by 35. That's impressive. And then I actually watched their game against the Pacers about 4 days ago, where they lost 123 to 119 in the final minute. But at one point in the third quarter, they were up by 17 and looked masterful. So definitely not going to be easy by any means. I don't want our listeners to think that. But with that being said, it is the second night of a back-to-back. We do have them in the Smoothie King Center Nets game. You have to win. Ollie, with that being said, somebody asked Alvin Gentry today at practice about, you know, teams being hampered by back-to-backs, and he kind of downplayed it. He said something, I don't have the quote in front of me, but he basically said, you know, it's about a 40-minute flight from San Antonio. These are professional athletes. It's not as big a deal as we all think it is. Do you agree with that statement?
Yeah, absolutely. He's gotten that question multiple times just this year alone that I've noticed. And, you know, Preston, the bottom line, I think, is it's not that hard on the player's body anymore like it used to be. Because let's face it, they travel first class. It's a direct flight from city to city. And they have the best trainers in the world. So they do all the necessary things pre and post game. So I think that's a big deal. You know, you get your body prepared, you know, 3 or 4 hours in the air, all the flight time is not going to really put a hurting on, you know, whether there's soreness. You know, usually I've heard, what is it, sprains get a little bit puffier, any kind of bruise kind of red more, simply because, you know, the lower air pressure kind of plays like that with human bodies. But that's not so much an issue. And of course, diet, everything's changed, everything is still geared towards getting the most performance, high performance out of players. That I think Alvin Gentry's right. These little trips across, you know, half the country just don't matter anymore. Sleeping in hotel beds, it's just not the same like it was even, I'd say, maybe 15 years ago. So I'm with him. You know, it's hard to want to, you know, we like to point it back to back. I truly think there's only a couple cities, couple trips where it really kind of plays a role, and that's whenever a team goes either into Utah or into Denver. I think altitude, that's about the only thing that you can't really prepare teams for within 24 hours after finishing the game. But other than that, yeah, I'm in full agreement with Alvin.
But what about recovery mode? Just to follow that up quickly. You know, obviously it's annoying to have to go to an airport, you know, pack your bags, all that stuff. But that only takes like at max 2 hours. So it's not as inconvenient as we lead it up to believe, although maybe it is emotionally. But as far as physically, even though these guys have top notch trainers, just as an average ordinary everyday person, if you, let's say, run a 10K outside and you have to run another one the same day, it's still difficult to recover versus when you have a week to do the exact same thing. You don't think having, I don't know, 38 minutes on the hardwood like Anthony Davis, Jrue Holiday, and DeMarcus Cousins typically do doesn't, I don't know, add some aches and pains to the next night?
No, because, well, first of all, to make it your comparison, don't they run typically an NBA player runs, you know, if he plays the full starter's minute, roughly a little bit over 2 miles every game. And what I was talking about, personally, like the pre and post game stuff, it's not just the trainers. Have you noticed some of the stuff these guys use where they get into these bags that somehow help swelling, and you can even wear it while you're on the plane? And they have these cryo something chambers. They have all sorts of things that basically just take away all this tension, any kind of bruises. They just lessen everything to where they can dissipate pain. You know, this is making for a great topic idea. I'm thinking here in the back of my mind as we're talking about this now, to see exactly how different things are just from, say, 5 years ago. But I mean, look across the league, Preston. I don't see any more of those back-to-back losses, do you? I wish I had the Pelicans right in front of me. I could just look at what have they done so far this year in back-to-back. I don't know. Do any of you guys have that in front of you?
I do, actually.
How we fared, like, on the second? Okay.
The Pelicans, it would take me a second to do all the math, but the Pelicans have actually lost to three different teams this year on the second night of a back-to-back. And that's why I think maybe Alvin Gentry is trying to outsmart himself into downplaying this, is if you think you have an advantage, maybe you necessarily take your foot a little bit off the gas pedal. We've already seen with the I can't find the other team, but the Magic was the first one. These teams who came on the second night of a back-to-back and were able to still upset the Pelicans. It doesn't feel like an advantage when you're losing to a team, especially at home. So I can definitely understand his sentiment in that article. Let's get moving on this, but I definitely would like to expand on this further. Maybe this could be an article all three of us could research and combine on. By the way, you guys are listening to the Bird Rights on Nothing But Net Network on Dash Radio. Kevin, we haven't gotten to you in a second. So let's talk a bit about some comments from the Pelicans practice today, which was open to the media. We'll start with Boogie. Of course, Ali was present there, but we're going to start with Kevin, and then we'll swing it over to Ali. Boogie spoke in depth about Jrue Holiday and his importance to the squad. He went on about it for about 3 minutes, actually. And Jrue Holiday, as either Ali or the Bird Rights mentioned today on Twitter, is averaging 22-5-4 in December. And he's really accelerated the offense to the next level, or at least helped to do so. Do you expect in the upcoming month Jrue Holiday's play is going to regress a little bit, stay the same, or do you think he can still improve, Kevin?
You know, that's a tough question, because we've never really seen Holiday sustain something for this long as we've seen. We've seen flashes of this a bit, and we've seen, you know, flashes of ineptitude for a while, too. He's just been inconsistent through most of his career, but this is probably the most consistent he's been so far since he's been a Pelican. And I think he looks comfortable. He looks happy. So I think that I want to say it will sustain. I don't know that it'll necessarily improve, but I mean, do we really need it to improve? What he's putting up right now is incredible. And if we get that from him, then, and we get what we get from AD and DeMarcus Cousins, and Etuan Moore is playing great, and Darius Miller is playing well, I mean, that's all you really need. So I'm very happy with the Jrue Holiday we have. And I want to believe that this is the one we're going to have for most of the, you know, for the, of course, we'll have off nights. Everybody does, but which you should expect every night going forward.
All right, let's swing it over to Ali. There were some comments mentioning that, as well as defensive intensity. Like I mentioned, Boogie and Gentry went in on that for a while. First of all, let's just start with Jrue Holiday. Do you expect his play to regress, as I just mentioned? Do you think he can continue 22-5-4 for the remaining 4 months of the season? Or do you think there's even another level that Rajon Rondo is possibly going to help him unlock?
I don't think another level is even possible when you're playing next to Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins. I mean, he's already shooting over 50% from the field, over 40 from three. This is as good as it's going to get. You've got to think when he's going to average, what, 14 or 15 shots a game, and he doesn't get to the free throw line all that often. So, no, this is about, you know, the max I think we can expect. But the good thing I feel like is this just seems like a different Jrue Holiday. I've watched every single game pretty much since he's put on a New Orleans Pelicans uniform, but he's never looked this confident, this assertive, and looking for his shot. Even when that three ball wasn't dropping earlier in the season, once he got past his first 10 games, he started really just shooting shots, just jacking them up, even though they were missing more times than not. Eventually, they started dropping right around the time Rondo returned back from injury. So I feel kind of hopeful that he can sustain this for probably at least the majority for the rest of the season. I mean, he's going to have those off nights, but as far as having some kind of regression to where he's going to go through a 3 or 4 week lull, I just don't see it happening. Not when you've got, you know, the two All-NBA talents and you've got Rondo, who just makes the game so easy for Holiday out there. All he's got to worry about is defense. And then just when he gets the ball, attacking from the wing or cutting, and wow, I mean, he just looks like a totally different player. So I don't see how he regresses unless somebody gets hurt and suddenly there's more put on his shoulders. That would be about the only scenario, I think, that, you know, Preston would knock him down a peg or two.
All right, I'm doing some quick.
I just want to say, like, I think the biggest shift, if we all agree, would be just in his mentality. So if he just maintains that mentality, then we should expect what he's doing right now to carry forward at, you know, at some level.
Yeah, Alvin Gentry was talking about Darius Miller, and I want to marry this to what we're saying about Jrue Holiday. He was saying it was good for Miller in Germany just to just be the number one guy, build up his confidence, get those shots, be the primary target offensively. And there was a game, I can't remember specifically which one he was referencing, where Darius Miller didn't have a good game. And he said the next morning in practice, he was drilling everything. And with that being said, I want to tie this. This is all going to make sense at the end to some comments made about Kevin Durant just unlocking himself defensively. And when asked about it, he said, I just don't have to work as hard on the offensive end. And I want to tie that to DeMarcus Cousins and Anthony Davis, because both of them have the capability to be, I don't know, better defenders, at least at their position in the NBA. Of course, we all know that Anthony Davis was second all-team defensive last year. But with that being said, Jrue Holiday shot 16.8 shots per game in the month of December. In previous months, he was just putting up 13. The more of the reins we give to Jrue Holiday, do we expect that, I don't know, that can free up players like Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins to give more defensively and to become those lockdown defenders that we know they're capable of, Kevin?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if you have if you ease a burden on one side, the other side should flourish more. I mean, that's just, you can put out energy more on the other side. If you don't feel like you have to carry a team anymore, if you can trust your teammates. And I think that's one of the things that happened with Boogie also, is like him playing a different way is a result of him realizing that he has players around him that can make plays. Like, you know, we talked about this a few podcasts back. It's been several now. I don't remember exactly when it was, but I remember it was the one when I was walking around outside.
I remember that episode.
Oh yeah, we're talking about how, you know, the teammates he's had in the past, he couldn't really rely on. You know, he never had players like Anthony Davis or this new Jrue Holiday, plus these emerging role players like Etuan Moore and Darius Miller that he could trust to carry the load for him. So he was exerting all his energy and, you know, mental energy, physical energy on trying to score every basket and trying to make every play. And now he can kind of sit back a little bit, and hopefully that'll start to translate into him being a better defender. And we've seen him putting out more energy on defense the last couple of games. And I think that is a direct correlation of everybody else emerging and him having trust in his teammates now.
Ollie, the same line of questioning. DeMarcus Cousins is averaging 19 shots a game. Anthony Davis is 16. And Jrue Holiday on the year is just under 15. This might be crazy to say, but would you want to take the ball away from DeMarcus Cousins, maybe even Anthony Davis at some moments, give Jrue Holiday more touches and emphasize more defense on that end from Davis and DeMarcus Cousins?
I think you're absolutely right, but I think that's just something that's going to have to happen on a spur of the moment. And what I mean by that is, depends on the team you're playing. What are they going to try and take away from the Pelicans? Are they going to throw the kitchen sink at Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins? If so, then you're absolutely right. Go through Holiday, go through Etuan Moore, Darius Miller, all the shooters, all the cutters, Ian Clark. This is a nice story that's building up too. So to answer your question, yeah, Preston, I think without a doubt, you want every major piece kind of handling the load certain nights to give, you know, certain other guys a break. You want Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins to not feel the need to score 30 points, because when you do, it's not so much as AD gets detrimental to the team's offense, but it's DeMarcus. He tries to do too much. It's been the story of his career. And then granted, he's never gotten really any help until it seems like this season with the Pelicans, where he is surrounded by such a wealth of options. And I think we're seeing, you know, glimpses, and hopefully knock on wood, to where these, like that last two games. If I remember right, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think DeMarcus took 7 shots against the Miami Heat. It was some ridiculously low number.
It was that.
Okay. And so there you go. And what would the Pelicans win by, like 15, 16, 17 points? The victory was like never in doubt. And I found that game so surprising, because we kept on scoring, but it felt like the Heat were playing a decent game, but yet the Pelicans were up by 20 points. And look at that. DeMarcus shoots the ball 7 times. I don't know. I think that gives us the answer right there. Pelicans can still put up 110 points without Boogie launching up to even 10 shots. Yeah, if the options are there, if they're being efficient, if they're open, you don't want Jrue Holiday taking step-back threes, too many Heat checks, you know, those type of shots. But like I said, it all depends on what the opponents do
against the Pelicans. If they truly are intent on taking away one, both of the bigs, then yeah, I want to see Holiday end up with maybe the most shots in the game. He's proven he's an efficient guy. I mean, over these last 15 games, like I tweeted out earlier today, he's shooting over 50% from the floor. I'll take that every day. And you should ride a guy like that too.
Yeah, DeMarcus Cousins did have 5 turnovers against the Miami Heat, but you're absolutely right. He had 16, AD 17.
Picky.
I can't stop, man. Jrue Holiday had 13, and Ian Clark, of course, led all scorers with 19. And Alvin Gentry greatly praised him during the practice today, saying that it's difficult for a rotational guy to be out of the lineup for 3 days and or 3 games and then be pressed into action. Ollie, is there anything else that I missed from practice that you want to tell our listeners?
No, that was the main thing. I wanted to ask him about the defense, and because that's the biggest key moving forward for me. If the Pelicans can, you know, have some kind of, you know, semblance of being, slowing the ball down, stopping opponents in certain areas of the floor, then they have a chance to be a really good team, and that's when the wins are going to start taking off, I feel like. But as of right now, even though the Pelicans have a top 5 offense, they're one of the top scorers in the NBA, you know what? Their defense has been just a little bit more abysmal as to where they're giving up just another additional point or two a game. I forget what the stats are. I wish I had these in front of me. But let's say the Pelicans are averaging about 110 points a game over the last 20 games. They're giving up like 111, 112 on the other end. So I don't think you can ask the offense to do more. It's all about the defense. So that's what I wanted to get out of Alvin. He answered that really well. In addition to what I've already mentioned about what the guards and the bigs are doing, he touched on this, and I think this is really, truly important. And he basically said the Pelicans have gotten into these tendencies where the defense kind of just loses its intensity, loses its focus, whether it's one game, the whole team, or something like that, because of how well they're scoring the ball. I mean, when you're putting up 30, 35, 40 points in a quarter, I mean, who cares how much you give up? Because more than likely, you know, that's going to be enough to win or, you know, give you the advantage, even though we haven't seen that's the case. So he says the Pelicans have fallen in that trap all too often this season. That's where they're just simply not translating that effort that you see on the offense when it is clicking to the defensive end at the same time. And as Alvin said, that's the most important time to do it, is because that's when you get the separation. That's when you can get a lot of momentum. That's when you can start breaking the team's spirit, the opponent's spirit. So I found that probably to be the most interesting part. You've already touched on all the others. He really talked in depth about Darius Miller, Jrue Holiday, and Ian Clark. That's something we haven't talked about, but he was just basically praising how great it is to see Ian, who, you know, hasn't been asked of all that much to even get on the floor and play minutes, that suddenly he has found his stroke and he's contributing positively out there. So it was a pretty positive, you know. Well, then again, why wouldn't it be after 2 games? It's Christmas holidays. But no, the team seemed in good spirits, and even Boogie smiled a few times. I want to say I saw his little son out there. There was a lot of kids playing on the court when the players were doing their media sessions, and I'm guessing that was mostly all the players' kids out there, because obviously they're not in school. It's Christmas break. All the families are together. But it was good to see Boogie out there. He was smiling, staring at his little boy, and being cordial with everybody, a little more than usual.
Yeah, I was glad you mentioned that, because I definitely took notice of that. And before anybody gets upset that there's, you know, a gang full of children playing basketball during a professional Pelicans practice, remember that it is the holidays. Christmas was yesterday. So it was nice to see all these guys with their families having a bit of fun. You are listening to the Bird Rice on Nothing But Net Network here on Dash Radio. Kevin, it's your turn. Let's start on these Brooklyn Nets before we get to some articles Ollie's written, including some trade ideas, some high-octane offense stuff that we want to touch on a little bit more, just break down the numbers a little bit. And by the way, those numbers, 110.6 points per game, field goal percentage 49%, three-point percentage 38%, effective field goal percentage 55.6, and true shooting 58.6. This is all directly stolen from Ollie's article here on thebirdrice.com. Make sure you check that out. Kevin, back to you. The Brooklyn Nets are right behind the Pelicans offensively. We're 7th, they're 9th. They've got 107.6 points per game. They are 27th defensively, very similar to the Pelicans, as you might notice. Now, they promise to be a handful, as we've mentioned, but why should the Pelicans expect to win this one? And I should mention that D'Angelo Russell is not back. He's their leading scorer at over 20 points per game, but he is out until January. What do you expect to transpire in this game?
Well, I think, you know, our bigs should beat up their bigs. I mean, they got a Zeller brother playing down low, and then I guess Damari Carroll's basically the starting power forward for them right now, and he'll be matched up against Anthony Davis. And while sometimes Anthony Davis has trouble with smaller covers, I think, you know, Damari Carroll's not a really fast player, and I think he doesn't pose the kind of threat that other guys do when they're guarding Anthony Davis. So I think, you know, our bigs definitely mismatch against them. I mean, overall talent wise, we have a much better team, you know, as terms of players on the team. It's just, they play with really good chemistry. They play really smart. Their coach knows how to get them in smart situations. One thing is, I don't think they have a great pick and roll big man attack, whereas other teams would, and that's what gets us in trouble defensively sometimes with DeMarcus Cousins trying to defend on a pick and roll. And I mean, if they're running pick and rolls with the I forget which Zeller they have, you know, that doesn't really scare me much. And
it's,
I think,
Tyler,
that's,
by the way,
one. It's which one?
Tyler.
Tyler. Okay. Yeah. And then, you know, they got Mozgov, who's a pretty good pick and roll guy, but he comes off the bench. So he'll have limited minutes, I guess, or, you know, unless we get Zeller in foul trouble or they adjust their lineups to match up against us, that might change things. But yeah, I just think we should brutalize them inside. Their guards, you know, without Spencer Dinwiddie's playing pretty decent so far this year, but I mean, obviously I would expect Rondo or Drew Holiday to lock him up. And, you know, Etuan will have Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, who's a really good defender, who might give Etuan trouble on the wing. But in terms of defending him, I think Etuan will be fine stopping him from scoring. So I just think the matchups personnel-wise are greatly in favor of us. It's just the matter of intensity, really. And I think we should come out with that intensity. I mean, I'm sure these guys want to keep a streak going. So I think they'll be prepared for that. And I think, you know, they're a team that I think Alvin Gentry and the rest of the coaching staff understands how dangerous this team is and will make sure that they don't take them lightly going into the matchup.
Yeah, Ali, they have a starting lineup right now of Spencer Dinwiddie, Alan Crabb, and then a guy that we have some trade talk rumors about, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson with the Pelicans, Damari Carroll, and who are they even starting at center? It's not Timothy Mozgov. I guess it's Tyler Zeller, but he's only averaging 19 minutes a game. That's why I asked. Sorry, what were you saying?
Right now, play the Spurs. It's Zeller starting for him against the Spurs right now.
Nice. So, Ali, what do you expect to happen in this game? By the way, I should mention that they do have a nice three-point shooting attack, and that is something that the Pelicans suffer against. They've got guys like Spencer, who's 36 from the floor, newly appointed Nick Stauskas, 52% from the floor, as well as Isaiah Whitehead, 42, Damari Carroll, 36, and Alan Crabb at 36.5. Ali, what do you expect to happen in this matchup tomorrow night?
You nailed it, Preston. The only things I'm looking at is, you've got to basically pose some resistance to the Nets. They're an ultra-aggressive team. That's the way they've been coached ever since who's the head coach? My God, I'm escaping. What was that?
Atkinson.
Yeah, Atkinson. Yeah. Excuse me. Thank you, Kevin. Yeah, Kenny. When he first got there, he basically installed this run-and-gun style of offense, and that's what scares me. You know, the Pelicans have got to do something defensively. Otherwise, the Nets, who shoot a crazy amount of threes, but they also get to the free throw line a lot. Sorry, I'm the one that's tired. I'm the guy that needs a nap, by the way, guys, because I've been sick. So if I start slurring, that's why. But, that's the thing, Preston. I think the Pelicans should win, but it's all going to come down to, can we just dissuade them on enough three-point shots, not let them get easily to the hoop? Because these guys are aggressive, and they can catch fire. Even though they're a very poor shooting team overall, you don't want them to suddenly start the game with like five open looks, get to the hoop, all of a sudden, you know, get that range, figure out the range by shooting a bunch of free throws. So the Pelicans have got to come out strong defensively and just basically force the Nets into much tougher shots. If they give them way too many easy ones, this Brooklyn Nets team, I don't have to remind you guys, do I, what they did to the Pelicans just a year ago. I think they scored 146 points on us, and Alvin Gentry even made mention of that after today's practice. You know, he reminded us, and obviously we all remember that. So he's like, this is what can happen if our guys don't show up. So the threat is there, but I don't expect it to happen, Preston. I feel like there's enough good vibes. These guys have a lot of time off. They finally found something that kind of is working defensively, and energy is not being an issue. So, you know, if they can just continue down that road, they should be fine.
All right, and we should mention that they are the third best three-point shooting team in the NBA. And one thing that's particularly scary about this Nets team is how effective they are in the second half of games. They really like to flex their muscles with their depth chart. Over 10 guys get over 10 minutes a game. So Kenny Atkinson really goes to all the depths of their roster. They score 29 points a game in the third, 27% in the fourth. So scary in the second half. Don't feel safe against this team. Let's continue with our line,
Preston,
of questions.
Preston, real quick, you just said they're the third best three-point shooting team. What do you mean by that? Because I know percentage-wise, they're awful. Their conversion rate is awful. They're like around 34%.
Yeah, this is just on made three-pointers per game in terms of they shoot them a lot and they make them a lot. But as far as their percentage goes, they're at 34.5, which is good for third to last. But they are going to be jacking them up. So the Pelicans are going to have to make sure that they get hands in the face, chase them out to the perimeter. But good for you for policing me, man. I guess your point is, let them take them. Hey, if they're going to miss them, they can shoot all the ones that they want.
Well, force them into bad ones. That's what you want to do. Force them into bad ones.
Yeah, and rebound.
Right. And rebound
as well.
Second chances, yes. Those kill. Oh, never mind. Let's move on. We've talked about the Nets enough.
You read my mind. You guys are listening to the Bird Rice on Nothing But Net Network here on Dash Radio. Let's talk about a couple of things that are up on the birdrice.com. Before we go to Ollie's article, as I keep referencing, it's very exciting. We're going to get there eventually, guys. And of course, that's the high octane offense, one that's currently featured on Bleacher Report. Kevin, let's talk about our trade column and talk about some of your favorite trade ideas. I know you had a mention of your boy Rashawn Holmes and Nerlens Noel on there. If the Pelicans were to dive into the trade market, that is quickly approaching this year. It's only a month from now. They wanted it 3 weeks before the All-Star break. What guys would you hope the Pelicans would target at this point in the season?
I still don't believe that we're going to do anything just because of what we have to work with and how well we're playing right now. But, you know, I still think the biggest hole on our roster, especially because we will be getting Solomon Hill back and Tony Allen back, is a backup big man that we can trust for long periods of time. So I would be looking for a guy who could play the four or the five or both, preferably. And, you know, he's been a number one target for me for a long time. For a guy that plays that position is Kyle O'Quinn. I think, you know, he does a lot of what DeMarcus Cousins does. He's a good playmaker out of the post, good rebounder. He scores well around the basket, decent defender, shot blocker. He has a good mid-range shot and even takes some threes now. Rashawn Holmes, I love that guy, but I don't see Philly trading him now. He's been playing so well and becoming such an integral part of that team. I saw today that I think it was Kevin O'Connor posted on the Ringer. He had Dario Saric listed on there as a possible trade target for teams, which is interesting. I like that guy too. I had actually suggested the Pelicans trade Ryan Anderson for his draft rights, a few years ago. So he's a guy I like too. That would be a good get. And I always like Trey Lyles as well. But I think now that when Jokic went down and Millsap was out and Trey Lyles started to emerge a little bit in Denver, which he seemed like more of an afterthought at the beginning of the season. But now I think they see some value in him, and I don't think he'd be easy to get. I still think Kyle Quinn's at the top. If you can give New York something that they want, you know, it would have to take because he's in the last year of his contract. So they might be willing to let him go with Cantor and Kristaps on the team, you know. So if you can get him to buy into a Jensen's salary, you can make that trade with some draft picks to give him some ammo in the draft or to put together for some other pieces that could possibly work. But I really don't see the Pelicans making a move, honestly.
Yeah, some of the other guys mentioned in the article. I know Kevin Barras is a big fan of Jonathan Simmons, and Jamal goes in-depth on him. Ollie, let's go over to you. You're a Damari Carroll fan, or James Ennis from Memphis Grizzlies, as mentioned in your article, and we're going to get a chance to see Damari against the Nets. Why would you hope the Pelicans would target him?
Well, I think the Pelicans need a big wing. As for Kevin, feels a little confident. I think a little too confident that both Solomon Hill and Tony Allen are going to come back, and you can rely on them as soon as they get back. I'm on the other side of the boat. I've seen too many injuries. I'm too big of a doubting Thomas now. And another thing that I want to mention that nobody's talked about, and I meant to ask Alvin about today, is, I don't know, you guys recall Dante Cunningham, how many games he like started, and then the Pelicans would play, and then at some point during the game, the PR department would release that he is listed as questionable, whether it's a back, I forget some of the other maladies they've listed, but he was questionable to return. And in some games he did return, other games he didn't. I just feel like that might be a sign that, you know, Dante's body's even, you know, cracking down a little bit, or maybe there's an underlying issue. So with three of those guys kind of, you know, almost being question marks for me, I still don't think we can expect, first of all, Solomon Hill to even come back and be ready after a torn hamstring, to jump right back on the fold, be able to run up and down the court for even, say, 25 minutes and have his rhythm, his shot, all that there ready to contribute. I just don't see it. I think it's going to take him at least a month of playing in games just to get in any kind of semblance of game shape. And then within this offense, and they're flying up and down the floor. They've gotten into such a good flow. So I've got my doubts. That's why I want the Pelicans to go strictly after this big, like, three, small, four type of combo. And Damari's at the top of my list because the Nets, I mean, it's been well known ever since they landed him, they were probably going to flip him for some kind of future assets. And I'm pretty sure that's still, you know, I haven't heard anything to the alternative. So you've got to still expect that's what they're going to be seeking. And the fact that I think he does have a second year, so not only this year, but he's a guaranteed contract for next year, too. That's going to make it an easier almost trade for the Pelicans, or, you know, a team that doesn't want to give up too many assets because he is not God, look at me, my brain's just stopped working in his final year of a contract. So he's a good target. And then you've got James Ennis, who I think the Memphis Grizzlies would probably want to move. They're going to be looking to probably start selling off all these pieces that they thought would help them in the playoff run. Now suddenly they don't need them. That's why I saw that article Kevin mentioned about Kevin O'Connor, and Tyreek Evans was at the top of his list. And if Tyreek Evans is playing as well as he has, and he's a trade chip, you've got to think a guy like James Ennis, who has had even trouble cracking the rotation, certainly can be movable. I like him simply because he's got that all-around game. He's played in the system under Alvin. I know it'd be a little bit different this time around with Chris Finch now installing, you know, tweaking everything, but I feel like he could just step right in, play in the position two through four. He can knock down a long-range shot, and I love the athleticism that he would bring. I feel like this team needs to do a better job with the rebounding, as we all have, I think, mentioned on these podcasts numerous times. Anthony Davis and DeMarcus need help down low, and James Ennis is a pretty good rebounder. I think against us, I think in that first game of the year, if I remember right, he had double digits. I want to say 11. So that's what I'm looking at. The thing, you've got to look at teams, Preston, that are not going to make the playoffs. So they're in the bottom. They're going to be trying to sell off all the pieces they can get for future assets. And those are the first two that popped in my head.
All right, we've got some questions, some mailbag stuff that I want to get to really quickly before we proceed. And I want to start with Robert Winston because we've already answered this one, but I just want to make sure we shout his name out. He says, Drew Holiday's current 15-game run realistic or just a regression to the mean from his poor start? So I wanted to make sure that we address that one. Thank you for your question, Robert. Next up, Ali, I might send you a way to do a bit of research on this one while I swing over to Kevin. The question is, if Drew keeps playing this good, how much will we end up paying him with those incentives? I've got one of them right in front of me. If Drew Holiday plays in 66 games, which he is certainly on pace to, he's already halfway there, and totals at least 2,075 minutes this season, he'll definitely meet that threshold at this point as he's one of the league leaders in minutes played. He's going to get an extra $510,000 for this season alone. Ali, if you could take a minute and find the rest of those incentives for us, I'll swing this over to Kevin, and we'll go with this one. Which current players in the rotation, Kevin, this is from It's Miller Time at Phelps a Lot, can see the floor in a playoff game versus other Western Conference playoff teams, in your opinion?
I mean, I think all of them except for Diallo, Ashik, and Ajinta, and of course the two you know, Cook and Jones. I mean, all those guys are performing really well. So, I mean, Ian Clark was on the Warriors and playoff runs. Darius Miller is lighting up the court, and he's also becoming a really nice passer. He's penetrating. He's becoming a better, a pretty good on-ball defender. Etwan Moore has been incredible. He's doing everything that you want. And that's what I wanted to touch on, too, a little bit with when Ollie was talking about he having a lot of faith in Solomon Hill and Tony Allen coming back. It's not necessarily that. It's just that I have a lot of faith in Etwan Moore, as I always have, and in now in Darius Miller to also play that wing. And then you add in Solomon Hill and Tony Allen. So I feel like we got a lot of guys that can play the three right now. And then, you know, of course, Drew Holiday's playing at an all-star level right now. And then, you know, we got our two bigs. So those guys are great. Rondo is played in the playoff. You know, look at what he did in the playoffs last year before he got hurt. Jameer Nelson's a pro that can play in the playoffs. So, I mean, we have a lot of guys that are primed to be able to sustain in the playoffs and get big minutes. So I'm not concerned about the roster at all. I think we have a really solid roster. I've always said that, you know, I feel like they'll get brutalized a lot, and he's put together a really nice roster. And look at the guys that have walked away that are thriving in other spots. It's just he's had some bad luck, and now hopefully things are turning his way. You know, he has a roster that's staying healthy and gelling finally.
Before I get to Ollie, I'm going to answer this one real quick. Is Rondo making the most threes in his career this season? This is from Solomon. And actually, the answer is no. In the 2015-16 season in Sacramento, he was 2.5 shots per game at a pretty admirable 36.5%. His best three-point shooting year came just last year with the Bulls. He only shot 1.9 per game, but he was close to 38%. This year, he's just below those Sacramento numbers at 2.2 three-point shots per game, and he's just above that percentage at 36.6. So he's shooting almost his highest for his career, except for that year in Sacramento, and he's pretty far up there as far as efficiency as well. Thank you for the question. Let's go back to Ollie. Did you find any more of those incentives? I remember Bobby Marks had some of those on ESPN a bit ago. I don't know if you were able to uncover them.
Yeah. I did find, but you know what the word I was trouble coming up with? Expiring. I wanted to say expiring contract, and it just totally escaped me like 5 minutes ago. Good God. But anyways, moving on. Yeah, Drew Holiday has a bunch of incentives tied up. In addition to the minutes played, games played, he's got one just to reach the postseason. He's got one where he hits a certain statistical plateau. I can't remember. It doesn't say in this article I'm looking at, but I remember seeing it somewhere. But it basically said if he – let's just say, for example, it was points, assists, and rebounds. So let's say if it was 15-5-5 or something. Whatever it was, I remember – I think he's exceeding it right now. So it looks like he's going to hit that. And then there was one where I think the only one he's basically not going to make is an all-NBA nod. That would be a heck of an achievement for him. But that's about the only one when I'm scanning through this. So it looks like he's going to get about three or four of them, but just miss out on that all NBA one. But here's something you got to keep in mind. As to where Drew's going to likely hit on those, you've got to also then factor in on the guys that won't hit on those. For instance, Alexia Jensa, Omar Sheik, they both have ones where they're tied to games played, and Jensa's certainly not going to make it. And it looks like Oshik's not going to make it either. Even though he's back now, he's been a DNP. I don't know how many games, but he looks like he's well on his way on missing that. And then Solomon Hill also has one where it has to deal with how many minutes he plays in the season, as well as some kind of defensive honor. So it doesn't look like any of those are going to happen either. So as to where, yes, Drew Holiday is going to look like he's going to have a heck of a payday on top of his just base salary. The Pelicans won't have to pay out all of their incentives to all their players this season. So, you know, I mean, I don't know whether you want to call it good news or bad news, but it is what it is. Bonuses just happen, but it looks like at least the Pelicans won't be paying all of them.
Ollie, great job while you were talking. I was able to get the information. If Holiday appears in 66 games this season, as we said, 2,075 minutes, he'll earn $510K. The bonus is current deemed likely based on the fact that Holiday reached the criteria last season. Holiday also has an additional $255K if he appears in 67 games and averages 7.3 assists and 3.15 rebounds per game. As far as the assists go, he's below that. Rebounds, though, he's above that. Last season, Holiday played in 67 games and averaged 7.31 assists and 3.9 rebounds per game. Currently, I think he's at around 5 assists per game, so we're still safe on that. The total value and unlikely and likely bonuses for Holiday is $4.7 million per year. Before we wrap up, first, let's go over to Kevin. Kevin and I have an article about why the Pelicans need to go on a streak now. We've already talked about most of it, but if there's anything, we gave 10 reasons. If there's any of those 5 reasons that you want to address, you know, kind of give a preview as to why our listeners should read it, go ahead and give those now, Kev.
Yeah, I mean, I think one is fan support. I mean, you know, I noticed as a season ticket holder every year after the Christmas break, people get a lot of, you know, we have one of the cheapest tickets in the league, and people give a lot of those as gifts for Christmas, and you start to see the next couple of games quite full out there. So, you know, we made a lot of fun of the Atlanta Falcons this week for their home when we played in Atlanta being pretty much empty. And then, you know, the support the Saints had this week playing a big part in our win against the Falcons. You know, I think that should carry over to the Pelicans. You know, we're on a winning streak and everybody's got Christmas gifts, tickets. So let's fill up the stadium, be loud and support the team. I think that would be a great thing.
All right, Ollie, we talked about your article for the past hour. High octane offense has New Orleans on course for 2018 playoffs. I'm going to give you about a minute. Tell our listeners a bit about the article and why New Orleans' 7th ranked offense has the Pels destined for the playoffs.
Sure. Basically, the offense is something that New Orleans never sees. This is just the third time in their franchise history since they've moved here to New Orleans, where they will finish, it looks like they will finish with a top 10 offense in the league. And incidentally, the last two times it happened, they made the playoffs. So all that history basically points to them making it. But what I looked at now, most interesting, why I've been harping on the defense, if they can just improve that side of the ball, is the fact that in their losses, they have played really well offensively. They're scoring almost 108 points a game in their losses. They're shooting 46.8% from the field, shooting almost 38% from three. And they have an offensive rating of 104.2. Now, this is all in just losses. Now, if you look at all the other teams, if you look at all their wins and losses, offensive rating, guess what? 12 teams don't even hit 104.2 offensive rating. And that includes the Thunder, the 76ers, and the Trailblazers, and a bunch of course, the teams that are outside the playoffs. So the Pelicans, even in their losses, have a better offense than 12 teams in combined wins and losses. So that is just huge, Preston. It's absolutely huge what this team is doing offensively on a nightly basis, whether they win or lose. And it just means that they're not throwing away games because they can't score points, something that was always an issue, whether it was usually under Monty or the first 2 years under Alvin. So, no, this is amazing what they're doing right now. And this is going to get them in the playoffs, but I think as to how much their defense improves is going to show us where they finish in the Western Conference standing. So that's why I'm just going to concentrate on defense now. We're 30-some games in. The offense is clicking every night, basically every night.
Make sure you guys go over to birdrights.com and check out that article. I read it today. It's fantastic. Make sure you don't miss it. All right, you guys, that's it for now. We're right at about the 60-minute mark. Thank you so much for listening. If you like what you're hearing, of course, there's a lot you can do. It's the holiday season. Do us a favor. Follow me at Preston Ellis, at Kevin B for Bounce, and at Ali Kosel. That's O-L-E-H. K-O-S-E-L, in case you have trouble spelling it. I certainly did when I first met him. And also, don't just click the link. Go to iTunes, search the Bird Rights, hit subscribe, and give us a 5-star rating. We really appreciate it. And while you're there, be sure to check out our previous interviews with Jamel McMillan and Justin Ferrier of The Ringer. And above all, you guys, spread the word by retweeting. It's really quick. Just hit that button next to like. It means so much to us. We appreciate it. We also got some great love this week from Michael McNamara, Bourbon Street Shots. So just want to shout out to him. Thank you so much for the love. We greatly appreciate it. And I guess, Kevin, you want to take us out this one?
Yeah, I'll just say I'm watching this Brooklyn and San Antonio game right now, and Brooklyn scored 16 points in the first quarter. So that's pretty awesome if that would carry over till tomorrow night.
They're saving it for us, Kevin.
But like I said, these guys are not so dynamite in the first half. They really turn up the volume in the second half. So look for a possible explosion against those guys. But you never know. It could be the Spurs, and I could wear a face at this point. Ollie, you want to take us out?
Yeah, let me just say one thing, and I forgot to mention from the article a stat. Over the last 5 years, only 4 teams have missed the postseason that have been in the top 10 in the offensive rating. 46 out of 50 teams have made the playoffs. So 92%, that's the odds for the Pelicans. I'll take them.
So you're saying there's a chance. All right, goodbye for now, you guys. We'll be back later this week. For now, let's go Pels. Thank you for listening to the Bird Rights on Nothing But Net Network here on Dash Radio. If you like what you're hearing, take 1 minute to go to iTunes, search the Bird Rights, subscribe, and rate our podcast today. Let's go Pels.